A Whale on Wall Street by Roy Trumbull, copyright 2007. Chapter 2. Bankers to the World. Kidzheimer's actually started much earlier. When one examines the realm of investment banking, totally illogical risks have been taken as long as there was a hefty fee attached. One morning, a supplicant had been admitted to the inner sanctum of Jonah M. Barge III, president of MeToro Securities. His name was John, and he was trying to explain the inherent risks in lending money to mortgage firms who were lending it out to buyers who were totally undocumented. No one knew or cared what they earned or whether they seemed to have the means to pay. "As I see it, sir, we are in danger of never seeing that money again."
"Well, John, that is your name, isn't it?"
John nodded.
"We are in the business of collecting fees and commissions, and these loans generate both. In fact, they're the only game in town right now. That being so, we and the other banks are playing ball. I'd suggest you return to your cubicle and figure out ways to lend more money to these folks. That's all. Good day, John."
John nodded and slunk out of the aura of that august fiscal presence. A few minutes later, Rolf Foggate IV entered. When the door was closed, he stared at Ernest and said,
"My Aggie can take yours, Steely."
EMB said,
"The devil it can! I'll meet you right here and now on the rug."
"Oh, no, you don't. None of that home field advantage using your plush carpet. We'll play over there on the Persian throw rug."
"Done. I'll take you down a notch, show you a marble's big mouth."
And so these two titans of finance engaged in mortal combat. Meanwhile, out in the antechamber, EMB's executive secretary was down on the floor playing jacks with the stockroom boy. Up and down Wall Street, similar scenes were being enacted. During a meeting of the Federal Reserve Board, there was an exciting contest over who could sail his paper airplane the farthest down the table. Later, the chairman sat on a dunker chair over a tank of water, and the price of 3 baseballs to unseat him went for $1,000. The number of times the chairman wound up in the tank would set the number of quarter points interest rates would be lowered. As they weren't actually talking during this horseplay, nothing would show up in the meeting minutes that get released on a delayed basis. In Washington, D.C., a senator from a western state tried to schedule an appointment with the president. The chief of staff put him off. "Is he in a budget meeting?"
"No."
"Is he being briefed by the joint chiefs?"
"No."
"I'll tell you what's got him occupied. Every day at this time, he sits in the Oval Office with a half pound of Play-Doh. I bring in his little rolling pin and cookie cutters."
"I'm sorry to bother you. I understand completely."
"Come back in half an hour and join us for cake and ice cream. If the president offers you a little empty cup and tells you it's coffee, please pretend to drink it."
Over at NASA, a new administrator was installed in a ceremony that would make a career sycophant blush. The kiss-up introductions were followed by praise and more praise. No one had to say he walked on water. Everyone assumed he'd been doing so for years. But this obsequious show covered up the fact that today's NASA hadn't sent a man to the moon or Mars or even to the Bronx. Their budget was boopkus. Such money as there was had been politically earmarked for various make-work projects that favored certain vendors and congressional districts. We didn't need pigs from space. There was plenty of pork on the ground already. Lost in the political schmaltz were the weather satellites, some of them pushing 30 years in service. Our eyes on the world. One by one, they were dying or had lost so many functions they might as well be dead. In an ideal world, new birds would be put up with the old birds so that measurement scale factors could be matched. Putting up a new satellite 4 years after its predecessor had croaked wasn't the same thing. As it was, the replacements were just so many CAD files on a hard drive somewhere. Nothing had been built and no launch date set. We were forced to buy images at typically lower resolution from other countries. A few of them were third world countries. In a semi-static environment, we might have gotten by. But presently, there were major changes going on in the ice sheets in the Arctic and Antarctic. It would be nice to watch and chart them. But doing anything in a timely way based upon an irrational budget process as unpredictable as sea ice was very hard. The director was in his office when his secretary announced, "Mr. Floss and Mr. Brush are here, sir."
"Beam them right in. I've been expecting them. See that we aren't disturbed for an hour."
"Yes, sir." All the men undressed down to their underwear, hung their suits in the closet, and put on NASA coveralls. Then the window shades were pulled down and the lamps dimmed to emulate dusk. They odd-manned out to select positions in the room. Then each carefully loaded his paintball gun. Back at Frogdorf Designs, Ruth had just gotten a call on her cell phone from her group leader. Six of the vice presidents had gone down to the fountain in the lobby, taken off their shoes and socks, rolled up their trousers, and gone into the water with their toy boats. In a few minutes, their limos would be arriving. Some tough love language and a hurried trip to the men's room was needed to make them presentable for the trip home. God forbid the doormen on Park Avenue should have something new to talk about. Ruth ran to the contingency room and quickly inflated some balloons with helium, tied strings to them, and stuffed as many packages of Cracker Jacks and bubble gum in her handbag as it would carry. Not wanting to wait for an elevator, she ran down the stairs. There was no time to lose.